welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 295 of the podcast. So today I have a mega update on what I've been doing over the last month, as well as my own business changes that might give you ideas for your author business. And as ever, you know, I like to tell you what's going on in my author life. And I know this is not advice. This is just my part of the journey. And I just share with you in the hope something might be useful. I also have a mini conversation at the end. It's a tiny interview with audio expert Dan Sawyer, because he blew my mind particularly over audio rights, and I wanted to share that now. And he'll come back on the show in 2017 and we'll do a whole show on it. But I wanted to put that out there since I did a recording with Dan. He interviewed me while I was there and I said, oh, well, maybe I could just ask you a few questions. So that is coming at the end. Okay, so first up, you guys know this is not a political show, so I will not be commenting on the election except for this tiny little thing here. I want to say, with the experience of Brexit in the UK, that through the difficult times to come and the inevitable conflict, it pays to keep writing and channel your strong feelings into creating, and the positive energy hopefully we'll combat the negative energy. That might be a bit woo-woo, but many of us have a strong platform, and you get to choose how you use that. Also, to try and have empathy with those who voted differently to you, whichever way you voted. And of course, with thousands of people listening to this show, if the numbers are split according to the popular vote, then there are people on both sides who listen to this show. One of the things I learned from Brexit is that the media creates a very false dichotomy, assuming that people vote in certain ways because of certain reasons. And I discovered that that wasn't true when I found many of my friends who actually did vote for Brexit voted that reason, for that, for reasons that I later understood. So I kind of just wanted to say, try and bring some love into the conflict and protect and defend those who might be adversely affected by any changes to come. And remember, things won't change overnight, as we're learning with Brexit. The vote was in June. Things are still, going through courts. They're going to happen next year. They might happen the year after. These things are a long-term commitment to change. So let's take a bit of time and to look at what you want to do moving forward and how you are going to use your influence in a positive way, whether that's writing books that help people change their mind or whatever you do. I just wanted to kind of put out a positive message in a time of difficult things. And if everything gets too much, please just step away from the media and social media. And what you find if you step away is, you still have to bring up your kids, you still have coffee with your friends, you still have to do your job. There are things that you have to just get on with. So, okay, that is enough of my comment on the US. But let's keep creating, as we all do in times of change. Right, so in this show, I'm going to talk about the three quite different segments of my month-long trip away, and then some kind of overarching stuff, because it's been a very big month for me in terms of my business. First of all, I have had some people ask me, well, how do you get anything done when you're traveling so much? As you'll hear, this month away was a business trip. This is not a holiday at all, actually. This was I've been through the ringer this month, but there is a reason. And I actually think it's very important, just, before I get into the detail, we have to take some time to step back and think about strategy and the bigger things that we want in our life, you know, we can get so bogged down in the day-to-day of like this, you know, this Facebook post and this chapter and these copy edits and this formatting and how do I do this design and, you know, really, really nitty-gritty details of the book process, the writing process. But what we have to do every now and then is take a step back and think, you know, why am I doing this? What is my goal? What type of life do I want to live? And work on our business as well as in our business. And this goes way, way, way back to that book, The E-Myth. I can't remember who wrote it now, but if you look up The E-Myth, you'll see it. And it was a kind of the entrepreneur myth, which is, you know, most plumbers who run their own business are just plumbers who have a business. They're not necessarily the CEO of their business making decisions for the business. And this is a massive shift in mindset, which I will be talking about in this show, for me as much as anyone else. I'm a very good businesswoman, and I hope you would agree with that. But I have focused on me as a business for way too long. And in this show, I'll be talking about how I'm now taking my business very seriously as a separate entity to me, which again, remember, this is not advice. This is where I am on the journey. So setting the scene for my trip away, it was a very important trip for me because this year I have felt I've been stagnating in many ways. And I hate that. I'm someone who loves change and thrives in change. So basically, I started writing, if you don't know my story very quickly, I started writing in 2006, my first nonfiction book decided to really change my life. That first book became Career Change. I started the creativepen.com in 2008. I left my job in 2011. And I now make a multi six-figure income with my writing. My husband left his job last year, joined the company. Things are amazing. And I mean, I love what I do. I know you guys realize that. I love, love, love what I do. I love being an author. I love helping the indie community. So basically, in the last 10 years, this has been a 10-year journey so far for me. I've done a massive slow motion pivot from a day job I hated, where I was weeping and miserable, to a career I love, a community that is awesome, and that's you guys, and a movement that I'm passionate about, because I really feel now that indie is a movement. It's not just authors, it's creators and makers. It's, you know, podcasters instead of radio, it's YouTube instead of TV, it's, you know, it's indie authors instead of massive publishing, it's, you know, the maker movement with people hacking drones and, you know, it's people doing, it's all kinds of things. People are retaking the sort of DIY stuff to themselves. And I love that. So I love indie as a movement, the empowerment of the creator, and I'm super proud to be part of it. But so this is I am really happy and I am really grateful for what I've done and achieved in the last 10 years. But 10 years on, so we're in 2016. So this is a 10-year thing so far. I'm 41. It is not enough for me to spend the rest of my life writing more books, podcasting, blogging, and continuing what I'm doing right now. I need more. And for me, financial goals, although interesting, and I enjoy making money, obviously, I think money is a measure of success, one measure, not the most important measure for many people. But I'm definitely at the point where things are really comfortable. So I could just continue doing this. And each book is a wonderful creative adventure. And I need that. Like the JF Penn side of me is, you know, I need that. I need to write more books. I've got tons of ideas. Right next to me right now are a number of books that I'm about to read for a new series idea. So that part of me is going to keep writing the books. I'm going to keep doing the show and the blog. But I need goals for the next 10 years. Because I'm ambitious, not just for me, but for all of us. I want to be at the front of the indie movement, forging us a new path. And so that's the feeling I went away with at the beginning of October, is how do I take the next step? What can I get, or what can I put in place that will be my goals for the next 10 years? And this is a huge thing, I realize, and I understand that many of you listening, some of you might be writing your first book, some of you might have a couple of books and just want to get to making five figures a month, or, you know, five figures a year or something like that. So all I'm saying for this show is this is a very personal show. I doubt if many of you are feeling the same way I am, but I hope that you'll be encouraged by my 10-year journey that if this is something you want, if you want to run your own business, then these are some of the decisions that you might come up against. And also, I guess, encouraged around the time it takes. I mean, I talk about long-term thinking a lot, as do many authors who've been around a while, because the first, you know, if I'd have given up after the first year or the first 2 years or even the first 5 years, you know, I wouldn't be here now. So what I'm saying is it can take time. But hey, I'm sure you've got 10 years to spare. Okay, so I'm now going to move into the three different segments of my time away and talk about what I learned. So I spoke at the Digital Commerce Summit on intellectual property assets or making money with books. And I will at some point be posting a version of that talk online, I'll be doing a webinar about it, which I will talk about later. So basically, this was a massive deal for me. It's hard to kind of explain how important this was for me, because Digital Commerce Summit is run by copyblogger.com. It's much more than copyblogger. What's really interesting is Brian Clark, who started copyblogger.com as a one-man blog way back in, I'm just trying to look, yeah, in 2006. So Brian Clark, I see as someone who was a couple of years ahead of me as a single author blog. That's how he started. He now runs his company, which is now Rainmaker Digital, made 12 million last year and has 65 people in a distributed company. So they all work remotely around the world. Now, I don't necessarily have ambitions to have 65 employees, but what I think is fascinating is that this massive company is a business powered by a blog. And so many people, I think the word blog, you know, the way it started, a blog is now very different. I don't know how many authors have understood this in terms of their mindset, but my site, The Creative Pen, is built off copying, or not copying, let's use the word modeling, modeling someone like Brian Clark. I did one of his courses really early on. I learned from bloggers back in 2008, 2009. And in fact, I had an email the other day from someone who said, whenever I Google something about writing or self-publishing, my site comes up. So The Creative Pen comes up, or Joel Friedlander's book, thebookdesigner.com. And I emailed her back and said, you know why? It's because Joel and I did the same course together back in 2008. That would be referring to the interview with Yarrow Starek earlier this year. I did Yarrow's course, so did Joel. Both of us learned how to do SEO and headline writing very early on. And so you can tell the difference between people who've understood SEO and search engine optimization, if you don't know what that is. And basically, I learned so much from Copyblogger. I would consider Brian Clark to be one of the most important people in my own development. Now, I really hope that I can be that for some of you. You know, that's kind of part of my ambition for sharing everything, is that I hope I can be a model for people and that you model my website and what I do when it's a success. But anyway, I spoke at the summit and Brian Clark introduced me on stage. Now, this is someone who a year ago I could have sworn did not even know my name. I just, you know, there are some people that you respect so much that you just are a bit fangirly about them. So Brian introduced me as a speaker on stage, and his introduction, you know, I'm not going to quote his words or anything, but I was standing there in the wings, and this was a theatre. This was a full-on theatre, and I will post some of the footage of my talk because I can post some of that as a clip online. Check the show notes for that. But basically, it was a full-on stage, you know, in a massive theatre. So this was a big deal. But him introducing me is probably as big a deal as Stephen King introducing me for some kind of prize, which I hope will happen at some point. That's a JF Penn goal. But so I wanted to just stress that, again, this is a 10-year journey. I've gone from someone who didn't have a blog and learnt from a guy who was a few steps ahead of me in the journey, to a point where he was introducing me on stage as one of the leading self-publishing authors and an expert in my niche. So I wanted to share that just as that meant a lot to me. And we have these moments in our careers that are highlights. And, you know, that meant so much more to me than hitting the USA Today list, for example, or, you know, those types of things. This actually was meaningful because it was a 10-year change. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, you know, thinking about change and transition, because what I also noticed from Brian is that, you know, change and transition are inevitable. They are happening. We see right now, if you can lift your head from post-election blues, you will see and look at something like Singularity Hub, or read Peter Diamandis's book Bold, have a look at the things that are happening in the world of exponential technologies. Things are changing with AI and robots and VR, and, you know, as people, our society is changing. So it's very important that we keep up with this and to actively choose your path. And that's what I see Brian doing. So he's gone into training. He started off in training. He now does software. He does services. He does the Rainmaker platform, which some of you may use for your blog. And also, what can happen if you provide amazing content for your niche audience consistently over years? Brian was one of the first people who talked about content marketing, although he didn't call it that back then. He was my model for give loads and loads and loads of stuff away and you will still be able to make a living. I still believe that, absolutely. And that's true for books, blogging, podcasting, videos, anything. If you give stuff away and serve your niche audience for years, you will be able to make a living. And yeah, you have to adapt and change it up, basically. So Brian did that. I hope I do that. You know, for example, any author still holding on to the old model of traditional publishing and massive advances will be disappointed. Any indie expecting to be a Kindle millionaire overnight will be disappointed. Any publisher attempting to market in the old way, you know, just through radio and TV TV ads and newspaper ads, will likely be unsuccessful. You have to adapt and change. You also have to be willing to go to change back if you have made a mistake, or if things didn't work for you in the past. That doesn't mean they might not work for you in the future. So, Copyblogger famously shut down their Facebook page a few years ago because they were like, what is the point in this Facebook thing? But Brian Clark said, we left a social network that didn't work for us and joined an advertising platform that does. And I really found that very resonant because I feel the same way about Facebook. Is, you know, I've never really been into Facebook, but now I do absolutely see it as Facebook advertising as a core part of my business. So that's why it's important to revisit the things that, you know, have changed. Some things stay the same though, and they still talked about owning your own website, your email list, so you're not dependent on the ever-changing platforms. Personal relationships are important, which is why going to live events can be, you know, super useful. And some of the relationships I made just in those couple of days at the summit, I know will stand me in good stead for years to come. And it's the same with you going to potentially author events. I think that relationships with other authors can be one of the most effective things in our author lives. I mean, first of all, for community and support, but also for sharing marketing tips, for helping each other out. You know, I remember still 10 years ago, I had no author friends. So if you're in that situation, I get it. I had no author friends. I had no community. I had nothing. And 10 years later, you know, I have you guys and I have lots of friends who are authors, and, you know, you just have to keep focused on this long-term thing. The other thing is Buffer, Kevin Lee from Buffer spoke, and he talked about pivoting before it's broken. This is really interesting, I think, in terms of people who have, for example, been burned with the aggressive production schedule that is supposedly necessary for success on Amazon. It's not. You can do many of these things in different ways, but pivoting before it's broken, as in, you know, if you've put all your eggs into KDP Select and now your sales are dipping, you need to change your strategy before you get to zero, or before you're broken. Pivot before you're broken. Like I said, I was stagnating earlier this year. I've considered giving up the podcast. I've considered doubling down and just writing fiction. I've thought about lots of different things. You know, at some points I get overwhelmed with the amount of work we all have. But pivoting before you are broken, I think, would be another important thing. Also, Rand Fishkin from Moz. And if you don't know Moz or some of the sites I'm talking about, this is what was so good about this conference. I was not the only author there, but I was the only person talking about books. Everyone else was talking about other things. But Rand Fishkin talks about, is the juice worth the squeeze? So basically, what's the point in doing this if you're not enjoying your life? What would you change? What would you keep the same? And, you know, this made me really reflect on this 10-year journey I've been on, because my goals were, I wanted freedom, location independence, to build a body of work I was proud of, to do more traveling. And I have all of that stuff. But it's also about, you know, well, something bigger than that, the whole movement idea about, you know, what do you want to achieve, or your legacy, that type of thing. So that was important, you know, considering, is the juice worth the squeeze? Are you getting what you need from your author life? If you're not, what are you going to change? The next thing was listening to Laura Roeder speak. She created meetedgar.com, which I now use for social media scheduling. It's definitely a premium service, so not for everyone. But she talked about transitioning out of what was previously LKR. Obviously, her name's Laura Roeder, so it was Laura K. Roeder. That was a training business where she was central to the brand. And this was a big deal for me, hearing her talk about this, because I increasingly feel, especially now, you know, my husband Jonathan is in the business, I can't have everything dependent on me, because what if I get sick? What if I die? You know, this is more than me now. This is someone I love. So I need this to be more than just me. I am a bottleneck to the business. And this is like a real big moment, realizing that I am a bottleneck to my own business. Everything comes through me right now, and I need to start transitioning. And she said it took 2 years to change things around. So as I later on, I'll be talking a bit about what's happening with this business. But that was really interesting. It's kind of, you can create a personal brand, but you then can transition into something else. And life does not end. So basically, you know, there are authors who complain that being an indie is too hard, or how much their publisher let them down, or how Amazon treats them badly, or how they can't get discovered, or how much they don't want to learn marketing. So all of this, you know, comes back to, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is this what you want for your author life? And if it's not, then just go back to writing for fun. You don't need to do all this stuff. And then finally, talking about finding your tribe, and don't try to fit in somewhere that doesn't bring you alive. And this is, a kind of random personal story, but it really was a big deal for me to realise it. So as a professional speaker, speaking in a theatre at a professional event that people have paid considerable money to attend, as a professional speaker, I tend to wear certain clothes. As a woman, it can be slightly more difficult than men, because men can wear a suit, and many of the male speakers wore suits and ties, even though they, it was quite laid back audience. You know, this is bloggers, people who work from home, but, you know, the speakers are genuinely smart. Now, I don't really wear heels much. I'm a sort of flowery Dr. Martin boot girl, although I've just transitioned into my fleece-lined furry DM boots because it's cold. But basically, I have some smart dresses and jackets and jewellery and things that I wear when I'm speaking because I'm a professional. I also have a pair of heels. Literally, I have a couple of pair of heels. But the ones that I took to Denver were these particularly nice red pair of heels. And if you go to the blog post, I'll link in the show notes, you can see the heels. And the reason it's important is because I was sitting there listening to the other people speaking before me, and I realized that I didn't need to wear heels on that stage. First of all, I was worried about falling over, but secondly, nobody cared. It was all about, you know, as speakers, we often, or as authors, or in general, we think everybody's looking at us, that people are judging us. And yeah, they are on one level, but hey, my shoes did not matter at all. And the audience I was with, the tribe that was around me, fans of Copy Blogger, of Brian Clark, people like Sonia Simone, who has pink hair, Chris Garrett, who is just ultra introvert techie guy, the lovely Rainmaker Digital team, and the other speakers who I know online. These are people who are introverts working from home on computers, people who value knowledge and what works for an entrepreneur. They didn't care about my shoes. Now, I think what's interesting is I learned a lot about public speaking from the Professional Speakers Association, and there are many conferences where you would be judged for what you wear, especially as a woman. And, if you don't look a certain way, then you're on the out. But actually, I was just like, okay, this is great. I'm going to wear my flat shoes. And the talk went well and it went awesome. And obviously nobody cared, but for me, it was great. It was a real moment of feeling a lot more content with myself. We all judge ourselves. You might think I'm super confident, but like anyone, you know, and if you've read public speaking for authors, creatives and other introverts, you know I suffer from pre-speaking anxiety too. But basically, I ended up wearing flat shoes. It was all good. And one quote from Joanna Weber, who from Copy Hackers, great website, and Joanna's coming on the show next year: don't be more average, be more individual. So I'm the speaker who wears flowery DMs. And there you go. And I value generosity, authenticity, excellence, and I don't care what shoes you wear. So this was a big deal for me. You probably are going, what the hell is she talking about? But there you go. Right. Sonia Simone talked about the mindset of the successful entrepreneur. She said, don't try to get support for your business from normal people. They won't understand. And I think that about being an author as well. Do not try and get support for your writing from those who have normal jobs, or your family, or even your normal friends. This is why you have to find your author community. And we need events like this to nurture us. And in-person events are tough, they're knackering and they're exhausting, and they take us out of our comfort zone, but we need them. And it was so funny because there's another example. I was sitting on my own having lunch, because I find it hard to approach people, and I was sitting on my own, and in fact it was Joanna from Copy Hackers, who I'd never met before, came up and said, hey, do you want to sit with us? And it sounds childish, but I hadn't, you know, as an introvert, I find it hard to do that. But if people ask me, I was like, oh, great. Wow. I'm really happy to sit with you guys and talk about stuff. So there we go. I hope that is interesting for everybody. And you can, I believe, still buy the recordings from that event. So if you are someone who wants to make a living with, or wants some stream of income from a professional style blog, particularly nonfiction authors, then you can check that out at Digital Commerce. I think it's Digital Commerce. Yeah, digitalcommerce.com. And I think you can buy the recordings there. And yeah, it was awesome. So clearly this is going to be a pretty long episode today, but I hope it's interesting for you. So moving on. There's one other thing I wanted to mention. Tara Gentile, who is also coming on the show next year, who is a great business coach, basically helping people redesign their businesses. I met her and really got on with her and her husband. But equally, she talked about the design of a six-figure business is different to the design of a seven-figure business. Now, what kind of business you want to design is completely up to you. But this is a topic that really resonated with me because I could brute force get to seven figures as an author, absolutely. But it would take, you know, some more time. And, you know, I do know seven-figure authors and they work, they just create book after book after book, and that is their focus. I need to do more than that. And also I want to do more in the community. So I've been, you know, as part of what I mentioned before, is for trying to figure out how the design of a seven-figure business would look in terms of what I want. So then I left Denver and went to the Oregon coast, where I attended a week long, and it literally was 7 days, with Chris Rush, Christine Catherine Rush, and Dean Wesley Smith. Now, I am such a fangirl of theirs. They have been my mentors for the last few years through their books, through interviews, through their blogs. You know, I'm a super fangirl, and so much of what I share, I've learned from them. So when I actually got there, it was quite weird. And I was like, oh my goodness, I'm a fangirl again. And I was quite overcome with quietness, introvert quietness. But by the end of the week, it was all less weird. And I'd actually taught them a few things, as well as them changing the course of my business. They've been doing that for a few years, but this was really good. It was a sort of intensive time. I also ended up doing an impromptu session on book marketing, which I will record at some point too. So it was a really intense 7 days, but it gave me a lot of ideas for my own next steps. I guess a few things, probably the biggest thing for me, and it's so funny because I've been talking about rights now since 2013. Looking back at the blog, in July 2013, I first posted a guide to intellectual property rights and an interview with Orna Ross, who is another one of my mentors and also a good friend. So since 2013, I've started to understand intellectual property rights, but this trip was a massive deal for me because I thought I knew what I was doing, but I don't. It is incredible how much we can use our intellectual property rights to expand our multiple streams of income, reach more people, and it's just super exciting. I mean, my mind is blown on it. It really is. And I have a long journey to go on understanding this, but I bought the copyright handbook again, probably 3 years ago, and I am now actually reading it, and I now understand that how valuable this is. Now, I think many authors, just authors full stop, do not understand the value of copyright. Publishers clearly do. That's how they've built their businesses. But now I am going to get far more into this and will obviously be sharing that over time. And the other thing I wrote about this is that the outsider inevitably becomes the mainstream, and transitioning from author to entrepreneur, which I absolutely have, and then to corporation. And as I mentioned before, you know, my business footprint is not just me, and this is now a publishing business. Also, the outsider becoming the mainstream. Dean said, if you want to know the future of publishing, look at the past, because the biggest publishing houses, the biggest literary agencies started out as just a couple of people wanting to sell books or wanting to sell rights for a couple of authors. And now a lot of indie authors have started publishing other authors, which actually makes them small presses. So I have been resisting this model, but my business actually is already acting as a small press. I have not embraced the term publisher. And it's funny because, again, Orna Ross is a friend of mine, but she's been banging on about this for a while. She uses the phrase author publisher, and I hated it. I actively fought her on that phrase. I was like, no, I hate the term. I'm an indie author. I'm an author entrepreneur. But actually what we are is author publishers. So this is a big mindset shift for me. It, you know, the other thing I think is interesting is we've seen, and I'm not going to report on news at all, but there was a report about the decline of indie author income through author earnings. But some of that may be explained by the fact that a number of top earning indie authors now publish under small presses, which will put them in a different category to the indie author. It puts them in the small press category. I think that's really interesting. Also, a number of top earning indies have signed with Amazon Publishing. So I think we are coming to the point in the maturation of the indie space where the top level indie authors, those people who have their processes sorted out, not necessarily making loads of money, but, you know, the top group who do this are starting publishing houses. So there you go. Interesting. So I guess the other thing is just to sort of reiterate that it was great for me to learn directly from Chris and Dean and to be in a room with a ton of, well, not a ton, there were 42 of us, I think, in the room. What was interesting is there were some people in there who have written, say, 200 books, who are making less money than me. I have 20 books, and just from book sales. Obviously, I make money from other things, but purely on book sales, with my 20 books, I was making more money than some people with 10 times as many books. And that really brought home to me, and also I think Dean learned a few things on my marketing talk, is that actually it is not just about writing more and more books. You do have to combine writing books that people want with some form of marketing. So, and whatever you choose to do in terms of your marketing. But this year, and somebody, I annoyed a few people. They were like, how many books have you written this year? And I'm like, I wrote one fiction. I did Destroyer of Worlds in like April, and I wrote one nonfiction, The Author Mindset, Successful Author Mindset, in whenever it was, July. Then I did a course on how to write a novel, and I haven't written another book. Now, I am currently editing End of Days, but basically I don't have a model of hardcore production. And I still do pretty well. So I hope that encourages some of you who don't have a ton of books. Right, I realise this is going on and on, but some of you will find this fascinating and the rest of you can fast forward. I wanted to, yes, so I can't share too much detail, but basically I came out of that week on the Oregon coast with a business plan, a new business plan, 5-year to 10-year goals, a strategy document, and like literally 40 A4 typed pages of notes, which I have printed out here on my desk. And I have a lot of work to do in trying to incorporate that into some kind of sense, as well as continuing to write my books. But the main thing is that although I started the company originally to contain my own books, my ideas, my income, now my husband Jonathan needs a bigger role in something more exciting. At the moment, you know, he's really just been doing smaller things that have not been exciting, like email stuff and video editing and website stuff and like kind of necessary grunt work, but not something that inspires him to want to be part of the company. And I've been co-writing and I want to do more. Next year I'll be creating a new author brand with Sweet Romance, which I'm doing with another author. And the next big frontier for indies is rights management. So licensing our intellectual property rights to companies that can help develop them. So what is going to happen kind of broadly is the Creative Pen will continue to be an author empowerment and training company. And it's, you know, it's super important to me to empower authors to do what they want with their creative lives. So it kind of already is this. It will include more nonfiction, more audiobooks, and I'm recording some more myself in the next month, online courses like Creative Freedom, Successful Self-Publishing, and I'm going to start doing webinars because they go down so well when I do them. And I already have 3 booked for December. If you would like to join me, go to thecreativepen.com/learn, and I will be doing a number of sessions. The 3 that are booked right now are Sunday, 11th of December, 7 Steps to Write Your Novel in 2017. Sunday, 18th of December, How to Make Money with Books in 2017. And that will be the presentation adapted from the one I did at Digital Commerce Summit. And then Thursday, 29th of December, during the holiday season, planning for 2017 and a Q&A on whatever you want to talk about as regards to writing, publishing, marketing, etc. So come along and spend some time with me. These are free webinars, although I will at some point be putting up the replays. And you can go to thecreativepen.com/learn if you would like to sign up for those live webinars. So that's the first thing. So the Creative Pen will carry on. Like, you know, you guys who listen to the podcast, nothing changes. I'm going to continue doing the podcast and the blog and everything to do with that. But in addition, I'm going to be starting a small press. And this is a big deal for me. As I've talked about, I've been so positively indie and independent in the purest way, also digitally focused and being very single-minded about you don't need ISBNs to make 6-figure income, which you don't, by the way, I still believe that, but in order to compete in as a small press, like to take things further, I do need to change the way I do stuff because there is an ecosystem within publishing that I could potentially get into. So I'm going to be meeting with Ingram to talk about print, and oh my goodness, I'll be buying some ISBNs. So luckily I have strong opinions, weakly held, until proven wrong. And as I said, this has been a real confronting month for me. And again, you do not need an ISBN or to buy an ISBN if you want to just do stuff yourself. If you want to run a publishing company, then you need to behave like one. And I am finally going to do things like take bookstores and libraries in particular, I want to take seriously. I want to support libraries. I want to have my books available in libraries. I will probably do some hardback. I've had some people asking for hardback versions of my books, which currently CreateSpace doesn't do. So basically, there will be a small press in the next 6 months. Now, again, this is a process. I am not taking on authors. Please don't pitch me. I've already had people pitching me recently. I'm like, no, I'm not. Don't pitch me. So the small press will still just do my books for now and this other author that we're doing next year, and will be the basis for trying to look at licensing the rights from those books. And then the third prong of the business, like literally we now are going to have 3 divisions of the business, is looking at some kind of rights management for indies. Now, this is a 2 to 5 year plan. So again, don't pitch me anything, and I don't have too much to say on this right now, except that there's a gap in the market for a company / agency that help authors license subsidiary rights, focusing on an ethically minded indie author focused group, I guess. Now this is very, 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 very early days. So again, don't pitch me. But I have been increasingly concerned about estate planning, and I know many of you have, especially those authors who have a lot of books, who want their beneficiaries to see things continue in the future. So those are some of the sort of top level thoughts that I have right now. It's a big 3-pronged plan and gives both Jonathan and I something to get our teeth into in the next 5 to 10 years. Nothing will be changing immediately. Of course, I'm going to share what happens along the way, but this is a transition from a single author company or, you know, someone who incorporates because they're making enough money that it's worth incorporating is very different from a company that could continue after my death, which is kind of exciting. Anyway, I'm super excited about this stuff. I think that we're in a very interesting time in terms of, you know, even questions like an AI. You know, what if an author uses an AI to help write a book? Who owns the intellectual property rights on that? Who owns the copyright? If an AI publishes a book, which they will do, or an AI writes a book, they will absolutely do that in the next few years. So there are some really interesting copyright law stuff, you know, things to be investigated, and my mind has been completely blown by the potential in our copyright. So I'm going to really hopefully be a leader in this space, and I say that tentatively because you guys appoint a leader, but it's something I feel passionate about. I want this movement to go further. We know how to do ebook, print, and audiobook in English language. We know that. We know how to market books. Traditional publishing is learning from us now with book marketing. What we don't have is an easy way or a clear way forward into negotiating and licensing other intellectual property rights. And I should just update on my own attempt as a single author to do translations. I think I've hinted at this, I can't remember if I've mentioned it, but the translations I've done for my fiction have been, I'd hate to say a failure, but a failure, as in I have ended up paying off all of my translators except one and have withdrawn the foreign language books. I've asked the German publisher for the rights to the book that I sold to a German publishing house back. It was digital only. It was one book in a series. It's just so hard to market in other languages if you don't speak the language and if you don't have the time. Let's face it, who does? And without a big backlist of titles, it's hard to get noticed. So I've pulled back on all my indie translations and I will be focusing on licensing foreign rights. However, the one successful translation is currently with Cyril. I won't mention his name in case everyone pictures him, but the lovely Cyril in France, who has a platform for nonfiction, is doing well. So books, the two books in French for the nonfiction, because Cyril has a platform for authors. So I would say if you want to translate and do a JV with me for my nonfiction and you have a platform for authors in foreign language, then that is still open. But generally, I will be looking at licensing those rights over time. The other thing that's changed just in terms of my process in the last month is really moving to vellum. Vellum, this is getting back into the weeds. You know, these big ideas don't stop the necessity of continuing to publish. I'm actually republishing my books right now through Vellum, which is a Mac only, formatting tool, and it's amazing. I've put a blog up on why I think Vellum is amazing, and we'll link to that. And also, if you're interested, my affiliate link to Vellum is thecreativepen.com/Vellum, V-E-L-L-U-M. Okay, goodness. I'm quite tired now telling you all that. And it's hard because I feel like I want to share, and of course I have just shared, but I also feel a little bit, you know, worried about putting it out there because these are some massive goals. But hey, we got to share our goals. We got to have big, hairy, audacious goals, BHAGs, and we can achieve them. 10 years ago, I could not have imagined where I am now. I just could not, literally was not in my head. So now I'm kind of empowered to go, well, what if I can pull all this off? What if I can really impact authors' lives in a positive way? I just feel that would be amazing. So I want to continue serving the community. Obviously, I want to continue making a good living but serving a bigger movement than myself. So obviously that week in Oregon was pretty hardcore. it was very tiring because we actually had sort of 6 hours a day in the conference room going through pretty hardcore stuff. And then I was, you know, working in the breaks. There were a lot of lunches on different topics. It was mad. And then, of course, if you have a conference room with 42 people in, you have a lovely place for bugs to sort of percolate and become massive super bugs. So most of the group who left the conference, because of course it was raining and that Oregon coast is completely mad. If you saw some of the pictures I sent, you know, the storms are mad, the rain is mad, the wind is mad, and then the sun comes out and it's beautiful and a great place. But with the cold and the rain and the sickness in the room and the tiredness, I got the head cold that pretty much everyone else got too. I then got on a plane back to Denver. So that was one plane with a head cold. And then I got on a plane from Denver back to London. And by then my head cold was fully, my ears had blown, basically. Well, not blown, they were so stuffed that I couldn't hear anything. And then I got back to London, met up with Jonathan, my husband, and then we got on a plane to Israel. So by the time I arrived in Israel, I couldn't hear much at all. The head cold was hardcore, and then I got a stomach bug. So we arrived in Israel and Jonathan's like, yeah, I don't think you should do this back-to-back traveling. It's just not good. And I was like, yeah, I know, but here we are. So I spent the week sort of downing pills, trying to make myself feel better. You know, kind of fell apart a little bit. But I was there for book research and it definitely wasn't a holiday. I don't think Israel is the type of country you go to for a holiday. It's, I would say, gritty. It's a gritty country. There are some beautiful pictures that I took, but in general, it is, you know, the country has a lot of issues. So it's interesting. That's what I would say. Now, last time I went to Israel was 20 years ago and things have changed a lot. Again, I'm not going to comment on the political situation, although I'm glad I went when we did, because I think things could change a lot if many of the policy decisions that have been talked about go through. We got some great pictures, many of which I will be putting into book marketing things. We're going to do some videos, like a walk through Jerusalem Old City with thriller author J.F. Penn. And, you know, stuff like that. Really good marketing imagery to go with books. I love having imagery that goes with my books. And the Arcane series, a ton of those books have have scenes set in Israel. So I'll be using a lot of those images for marketing. I will link to the photo album in the show notes so you can see where I went, and I'll be posting those videos in the next few weeks. The photos are also all at facebook.com/JFPennAuthor, which is my fiction page. And Israel was, I mean, basically, I don't think I had a clue how much this trip would change my 10-year goals. Or in fact, I didn't have any. That's the point. I didn't have any goals before I went. And as I said, I was stagnating. So if I'd have just come back from Oregon, back here to Bath, and spent the following 2 weeks processing all my to-do list, you know, that would have been awesome. But going to Israel off the straight away was awesome in a different way. And it did mean that Jonathan and I got to talk a lot about what I'd learned. And he's got some exciting things on his list, which I will talk about when they're more official. But basically, it's this whole month has changed my life. which is kind of crazy, and I wanted to share that with you all. And but rest assured, the things that I will be doing will benefit you, you know, and I will continue to share everything on the show. Okay, so I am going to do the sponsorship section, and then I will share the interview with Dan on the audio stuff. So I wanted to say that today is sponsored by everybody who sponsors the show on Patreon, and we have had such a bumper crop. It has been an awesome month. So I'm going to read out the names now. I'm just grabbing the rest of them. Okay, you ready? And of course, it's been a month. So this sounds like tons of people. But thank you to everyone who supports the show on Patreon. I don't think you realise how much it means to me. I keep saying it, but it means so much to me, because all the stuff we do online, and even readers, you know, with books, you know, it's great to get emails from readers when they've enjoyed your books. But I put a lot of work into this show. It takes a lot of my time. So to actually hear from people that you enjoy it, or, you know, people who support the show on Patreon, even just, you know, a couple of dollars a month, which is like a tip, that's brilliant. And I love it, and it means a lot. So, okay, so thank you to new patrons: Jeff Elliott, Nikki Gaines, Daryl King, Greg Payette, Peter Dudley, Ruth F., Valerie Francis, Alison Wood, Carla Conrad, Adele Walsh, Lisa Van Pelt, Susie Howe, Jewel Lindquist, Laura Haley McNeil, Bob Baker, Barbara Cam, A.B. Richer, hope that was right, A.B., Eric Edstrom, Susan A. Jennings, Barry Pearman, Patty Brower, and Thyra Root, which is an awesome name, Thyra. Okay, so thank you to all the new patrons, and thank you to all the existing patrons, especially those who have been supporting since the beginning. I really appreciate it. And I will be recording the Patreon-only Q&A in the next few days. So you all have the link to that. So please go and ask your questions. You know, maybe you have questions off the back of this show. So yeah, please do put your questions there. If you would like to join the Patreon support, you can go to patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. And as I said, you know, you can even just do $2 a month, or as much as you like. but yeah, less than a coffee a month. So, and you'll get that extra monthly Q&A audio and a whole year's worth of backlist too. All right. So once again, thank you all for listening. Thank you for your support. I'm not going to share any of the many tweets and emails I've received, because there are so many that I kind of, there's just too many, basically. So we did want to say a special thank you to the patrons I met while I was traveling. I can't remember everyone's names, but I met quite a lot of people who support the show. So hello, if I met you at DCS or in Oregon, and for those of you who claimed your hugs, that was wonderful. And yeah, thank you everybody. Now I will, there will be an interview with Dan Sawyer, or J. Daniel Sawyer, who has is an author of Dan is actually one of the most intelligent people I know. He's also a theologian, and we have intelligent conversations about theology and God things. But this, he also wrote Making Tracks, which is a book all about how to do audio. And Dan has been doing multi-voice production, like full production audio, for years. He's just like an audio god. So in this little conversation, which we recorded in Oregon, I ask him about some of the potential audio book IP rights. So listen on if you are interested in the audio stuff. Otherwise, I'll be back next week, and we'll be back into the regular way the show works. So please do email me or tweet me with your comments about the show. I love to hear from you. It means a lot to me. Okay, I'm going to go now because I'm just gushing. See you next time. Who are you? What do you do?
My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I write science fiction, fantasy, mystery, and nonfiction. I produce podcasts and full-cast audiobooks, the occasional movie, and I'm a professional photographer.
Wow.
But basically, if it was a hobby at one point or another, I made it into a career.
And that's brilliant. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you specifically about, audio, okay. Because, you know, you are an audio guru. And we've been talking about copyright at this workshop. And you said something yesterday which really intrigued me. So most authors think that audio is just one right.
So, how deluded they
how deluded are. We are. Yeah, I know. And I was shocked because I consider myself to be quite educated, but clearly not. So can we just, specifically on audio, what are the types of rights that people can sell? License.
Okay, yeah. But so there's your standard audiobook. One reader reading the text of the book. Then you can have two readers, or you can have generic multiple readers. Any of those you can pair with a production level. Bare bones, meaning voice only. Enhanced audiobook, which means with some music between the chapters and that sort of thing. A full production audiobook, which would include like environmental sound effects and sometimes Foley, or a really lavish production with an original score going through it like a movie. So at the most complex end of each of those, you get full cast, which means you've more or less got one person reading each character, or at least you've got a distinct voice for each character, because some people can do lots of voices, and a full production. So it basically sounds like an audio movie with a narrator hanging around for the hell of it.
Which is, is awesome. Was that everything?
And then you can do any of those abridged or unabridged. And then you can also do dramatic adaptations where you cut the narrator out and rewrite the dialogue so it's more like a radio play, or in fact, is a radio play. And then you can get really creative and go and invent whole new things from there. There's, you know, audiobooks paired with slideshows, like what they call them, audio comics, where you get comic book cells and then you read the book along with the comic book cells, or with a photo slideshow to give you sort of a storyboard feel walking through the book. It goes on and on and on.
Wow. You talked yesterday, I mentioned about ACX. Mm-hmm. Now, explain what you told me yesterday about what ACX takes and why that's a bad thing compared to the, you know, the production rights, that type of thing. Explain that again.
All right. So when you do a royalty split through ACX, and I have to clarify that because you can go through ACX and use it like you would use KDP, where you just upload something you've already done. But if you're using ACX to administer a royalty split between you and the producer, you as the author or publisher who rights holder, ACX becomes the fiduciary, which means the person responsible for handling the money. And it's part of the contract that you are exclusive with the production through ACX on an auto-renewing 7-year basis. So if you want to pull it out, you have to write them 60 days before your thing is come up for renewal, or it'll automatically kick over for another 70 years. So you want to put that on your calendar if you ever want to get out. And that exclusivity applies to the story, not the production. So your story will be in the Amazon Audible ecosystem, whatever that entails, and nowhere else in the world.
Yeah, so just to be clear, if you do that, which I have done, mm-hmm. I can't, say, license for a full production audio.
That's right, because they grab audiobook, I'm making air quotes, audiobook rights in a generic, broad sense. So you can't then
do that.
Yeah, you might be able to license out for a radio drama, because that's an adaptation. But any of those other kinds of audiobooks, you couldn't do another one of those.
Yeah, and that was kind of a shock for me. I was like, I didn't realize that. So is that what, if people have signed a contract with a publisher would also take that story audio right, not specific production?
Yeah, if you have signed away audio rights to your publisher, they now own not just the audiobook rights, but the audio
else.
Comics and the radio dramas and everything else like that. You want to hold those rights. Those are important.
Right. Okay. So what would you recommend then for people wanting to do audio? So what should I be doing?
There's three basic categories of ways to do things. And then there's a whole bunch of ways you can futz with them. You can do them yourself, meaning that you produce them yourself, whether you're reading them yourself or not. And you own everything. If you're hiring voice talent, then you will have to pay the voice talent. You can pay them in cash, or if they trust you to be a fiduciary and you're willing to take on that responsibility, you can pay them in a royalty split. If you do that, and you want to protect your business relationships and not get in legal trouble, be very meticulous about your bookkeeping.
Yeah.
And pay on time. People get pissed when you don't do that. Or you can approach a audio production house to sell your rights to, and you can then slice those really fine. Like, for example, my house will occasionally buy full cast, full production rights from authors who I'm fairly sure I'll be able to make my money back and have a good long-term asset for. And if you were to come to me, and I had the money, which I don't right now, otherwise I would be pitching you this. If you were to come to me, I would say, yeah, actually, let's do a deal for full cast, full production rights, because your books would make really fun full cast audiobooks. And so I would then buy that from you, and you would retain all the other rights, audio rights to your book.
So I could still have a single narrator version that I did with somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of important because they do serve different market segments. There are some people who absolutely, deeply, and with a white-hot hatred, loathe anything other than a person reading in monotone about the book that they're reading because they just want the words and want to do all the interpretation themselves. And then there are people like me who like to put the most lavish production on they can while they're working on something boring and just soak into the story universe, and any extra cues that are there just make it better. And there's a whole range of people in between.
Which is really interesting, and I think we've all been too narrow in our I've been too narrow in my thinking of what audio rights are, and what you're saying is really interesting, I think.
And of course, anything you produce yourself or hire done, you can take into the Amazon Audible ecosystem through ACX, or you can go
just non-exclusively.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you can take it exclusively too if you really want to, but just keep your eye on that renewal date. At the moment, going exclusive with Amazon Audible is not an awful thing because they have 80% of the downloadable market. So, you know, you are cutting yourself off from a bit of the market now. The question is, how quick on your feet do you want to be able to be when the market shifts? It will at some point. I don't know whether that's going to be in 1 year or 9 years, but it's monopolies don't stay monopolies without state support. It's just a basic rule of economics. They get lazy because they don't have to compete, and someone comes in and undercuts them. So it depends on how fast on your feet you want to be. You could go exclusive and keep your eye on that renewal date, and because you've produced it, you can pull it out and take it elsewhere. Whereas if ACX is acting as the fiduciary, you can't do that unless you reach a separate deal with the producer at a later point.
Yes, and I mean, I like ACX because I like them handling the payments. I want to have that with ebooks so that we can do more collaboration in the community and not have to be the one uploading it to KDP and managing all the payment split at the end of the month. So that's something I'm talking to other people about. But was that all the options?
That basically covers all of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So Author Republic is a new
Authors
service.
Republic. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are mixed. I've just finished negotiating with them, and of course now I've finished negotiating with them, I'm not going with them because of everything going on with Kobo, so I'm holding myself back for about 6 months to decide whether to make the leap, because Kobo's just bought Overdrive, and if I can get into Overdrive through Kobo, I'll get a better royalty percentage than going through Authors Republic, in which case Authors Republic can jump off a cliff. But so the good and bad of Authors Republic. The good is they get almost everywhere that the Amazon ecosystem doesn't get right now, which is fantastic. It saves you a lot of legwork because you can negotiate directly with all of those places. They're not locked up with Authors Republic as their only distributor. So you could go in as a publisher and say, look, I've got 20 titles. I want to be in your store. What kind of deal can we do? And they'll talk to you. You can call audiobooks.com and everybody else. Of course, you have to track them down, and it takes time.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Authors Republic, basically the value they bring to the table is they cut all that out. They've already done that. So
basically, one could go non-exclusive ACX and use Authors Republic for the other stuff.
Right. Now, what Authors Republic does demand is 7 years of exclusivity on the production only. So you could release an enhanced ebook through Authors Republic and a single read through somewhere else, and you're fine.
And you're fine. Ooh, sneaky.
I talked to them in some depth, and they won't shorten their exclusivity period. I ran my head against that wall for a while. And they won't do it because ACX takes 7 years. That's the industry standard because they own the industry. So we've got no incentive whatsoever to
Fair enough.
You know, I can deal with, but the reason that they're going for exclusivity is they don't want duplicate listings in catalogs. So if you were to strike a separate deal with Kobo and take the same production into Kobo, then there's two listings of exactly the same production in the same catalog, and who gets, you know, who gets the sale.
Yeah.
So they don't want that confusion. But if it's a separate production, they don't care. So it's a much less handcuffy version of exclusivity. I still shudder at exclusivity myself, but if you're going to have someone take exclusivity, grabbing it over a narrow slice is much better than grabbing it over a broad slice. And like ACX, it's an auto-renewing unless you provide written notice, etc. They're also, another good thing I've got to say in their favor is they are remarkably accessible and easy to talk to. I read their boilerplate. I had 6 problems with it. So I wrote them. I said, I'm the author of Making Tracks. I've been telling people for years that this kind of service is due to come available. I heard about you. I was excited. And then I read your boilerplate and I'm like, I can't recommend this to anybody because you have these problems with it. Your language is unclear here. This makes it sound like you're trying to get a whole bunch more rights than the rest of the contract makes it sound like you do. And I would like to do these changes. And if you can make these changes, I'm all yours. And they came back and they, 4 of those 6 things they changed.
Oh, cool.
And not only changed for me, they changed in the boilerplate.
Yeah.
So it's now the kind of thing, and one of those things was the exclusivity period, which they're just not going to budge on. And the other one is something that they might budge on for a particular company, because they'll negotiate a la carte, too.
Hmm.
So they might negotiate it for me, but they're not going to put it in their boilerplate, because not everyone's going to ask for it.
Yeah.
And so...
And then, and you have lots of... You're an audio guy.
Right. Well, not just that, but there's, you know, there's the incentive if... From their perspective, if not everyone is going to ask for it, why put it in the boilerplate? Because,
you know,
then you get to keep more. But they're very easy to talk to. The person that does negotiation for them is really straightforward, doesn't play a lot of power games. So I like them. I'm just not quite ready to go there yet myself because of what else is going on in the industry at the moment.
Yeah, okay.
But if you are an international author wanting to get into the Amazon ecosystem, they're your way in.
Yes, because ACX is only open to US and UK.
US residents, yeah. Oh, UK too.
Yes, UK
nice.
Too. Yeah, but nobody else. So you said what's going on in the industry right now?
Uh-huh.
What do you think is shifting?
Okay, I have to talk carefully.
Yeah, no, I realize that. Is there anything that you can share?
Okay, here's what I can say without breaching any anything someone told me on the QT. Kobo has just bought Overdrive.
Yeah, Rakuten.
Rakuten, yeah. Right. And Kobo is now piloting programs for their ebooks to get into Overdrive.
Yeah. And why is Overdrive useful for people?
Well, Overdrive is one of those ecosystems that is not measured in that 80 to 90% figure because Overdrive is not sales. Overdrive is library borrows, but they pay like sales. So the chunk of the market they are is a big question mark, but in terms of libraries, they serve about 60% of the libraries in the U.S. and a non-trivial percentage in Canada.
And also they do Australia,
they
too?
They do Australia, too? Okay,
I believe so, yeah.
Nice. So they've got a big market of libraries around the world, which are otherwise a royal pain in the ass to get into. And if I can take my audiobooks to libraries, I'm a happy guy.
Yeah, because actually, when you think about libraries, they've always had a lot of audio in, mm-hmm. like in the tape decks and things. Mm-hmm. Like that's where I used to get audiobooks when I was a kid. You know, you go and get them from the library.
Yep.
So I think you're right. That could be a really big market.
I suppose I should mention the other market that doesn't pay anything, but in terms of marketing is a really good idea, is Libraries for the Blind. They don't pay out, but you can donate audiobooks to them and they will keep them around in case people want to borrow them.
Fantastic. No, that's good. So the other thing I'm interested in right now is this audiobook box set thing. So, of course, you know...
Yeah. I was so excited to hear about that, too. Because I have an audiobook box set. It's not my books, but it's, you know, it's a set I produced. And it's a box set of short stories. So yesterday at the conference we're at, someone was talking about the weird price structure that Audible has and how it incentivizes super short and super long purchases, and books of an intermediate length just don't move. Well, I have a box set of short stories that I'm now, of course, next week, immediately going to break out.
Going to break out.
Into individuals as well. Because it sells okay as a box set, but as individuals, it'll probably move a lot more. And I've got a novella sitting right in the middle, and it moves nothing. Which is a continual source of frustration for me, because the production itself is fantastic, and everybody who hears it loves it. And I've been hitting my head against the wall trying to figure out why it's not moving. Well, I'm not an Audible customer. So I had no idea. Now I know, well, okay, well, I'm in the middle of producing the next two books in that series, both of which are longer books. So as soon as those are done, the box set is going up the next day. Same day as the next two books. All of them are just...
Gonna go out. And just to explain to the listeners, I joined Audible to work out what the hell was going on, and I get a $7.99 credit. And so when I log on to get my book for my credit, I want something that's worth more than $7.99, because my customer head goes, oh, that one's $24.99. I want that one. I don't want the one that's $5.99. And the one that's, you know, that's based on how long it is. Mm. So if the audiobook is super long, then you're like, oh, that's a really good deal. So you buy that. So what I'm doing is putting my novels into three book box sets. So now instead of 7 hours, they're getting 21 hours. And because of WhisperSync, you can still get the, when you do a BookBub or something on a box set, the audio will also spike. So I think this is amazing. And I know there's a lot of people, not a lot of people, some people are doing this already. You can see it on Audible, but I think it's quite a new concept.
Yeah.
That indies can jump on.
I know. So I'm really excited about it, even though the concept is all 24 hours old to me.
But it's so interesting, because I think I first heard about it probably a year ago, and I did not get it. And as we know, so there were people listening yesterday who hadn't done ebook box sets yet, who didn't really get it either. But I get so much income from ebook box sets, I'm really hoping that it's going to make a difference to my audio sales.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really great tip for people, is to just, why not? You know, we can do this. You can do this type of bundling, you know, because on ACX, you claim the ebook. Mm-hmm. If you have an ebook box set, why not do an audio?
Yeah. And not only do you claim the ebook, you can't actually put an audiobook up without one, which I found out the hard way.
Fair enough. Well, we could talk for ages, but just tell people, and you are going to come back on, because you've got a new version of Making Tracks.
Yeah, new version of Making Tracks
is going to come out. 2017?
Yep.
Great. So you're going to come back on the show and we'll talk more about that.
For sure.
Because things change quite a
lot.
And
I'm doing a lot of rebranding in between now and then too, so
fantastic.
I can report on some of those experiments.
Yeah, that'd be really good. But tell people where they can find you right now.
Indeed. You can find everything I do at www.jdsawyer.net. Lots of fiction, lots of nonfiction, and a ridiculous amount of blogging and podcasting.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Dan.
Thank you, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.